How important was the Bible to education in early America, and what kind of difference did it make? We're going to talk about that right now with Christian educator Travis Witt. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and this is Vocal Point. And Travis, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Well, it's quite a pleasure to be with you, my friend. I was excited to see what was coming out of Providence Forum with the video a couple of weeks ago, and so that was incredibly exciting. Thank you for having me on today.
Oh, absolutely, and thank you for participating in that. So let's go ahead and focus on the Bible. It's my understanding that early America, primarily because of the Puritan influence, was so well educated compared to, you know, other countries and other times, but it was the Bible was the key to that, so that people could read the Bible for themselves. Tell us about this, and go ahead and wax eloquent. Pilgrims, Puritans, etc.
Thank you. Let's see if we can do some wax eloquently today. Well, you know, when you think about it, Jerry, the Pilgrims were here in the 1619, 1620 area. But think of the reality that by 1636, Harvard University is founded. So less than 20 years from the founding of the Plymouth Colony, a university had been started to specifically do one thing, to prepare individuals within the culture to understand the reality of the Word of God, and the importance of that Word was truly found in the expense that would have been used to print, and the printing press had just recently been a part of a history at that time. So the one book that was going to be printed was going to be the Bible. So the individuals learned how to read. They learned how to write. They learned a lot about the reality of spelling and moral issues. But in 1636, Harvard University is founded. And then 10 years later, statistics would say as many as 150 college-educated men had migrated from Europe to be a part of what was going on in the founding of this nation. And we have most, if not all, of the institutions historically were started by pastors or by churches or by individuals to make sure that the reality of education, number one, was founded on the Word of God, but then anything beyond that had to be founded on the Word. So the primary purpose of education, at least from a higher level education, Jerry, was to equip individuals with understanding the Word of God, and then allow that Word of God to be ultimately the foundation of the education that would occur later.
So if we compare, let's say, the history of the United States in the first couple hundred years, because of this, you know, big Bible influence, with other nations in terms of their history, is that kind of like an exceptional thing? I mean, in other words, it's quite a literate country and quite a lot of Bible reading there.
Well, not only was it a literate country, when you look at the numbers of individuals who were reading in the French Revolution, those numbers were down at maybe 2 out of 100 individuals in France were able to read at the time of the French Revolution, when in fact public schools and expectations from governments or communities in the northern parts of the state, northern parts of the of this country, were actually saying, you know, we need to make sure that schools are started so that individuals can learn how to read the Word of God. And to go even further, when you think of the first public school law, was called the Old Deluder Satan Law in the 1600s, because the reality was the founders of this country believed that if you were not reading well, then the deluder Satan would be very good at being able to manipulate you away from truth and away from being able to read. And then if you weren't able to read the Bible, then you weren't able to read the reality of the laws that were being passed based on the Word of God.
You know, it's interesting, when you were mentioning Harvard, here, as you pointed out, okay, the Pilgrims come in 1620, and then
right,
10 years later, the Puritans come, you know, the first major, you know, massive, you know, immigration. Now, in 1628, a few Puritans came in small numbers, but the big mass migration was 1630. By 1636, as you point out, they founded Harvard to train ministers. Now, there's a sign in cement. It's chiseled in cement, and it's there on the grounds of Harvard. And I've taken photographs of it and so forth. Now, I'm going to just tell a quick anecdote. In 2002, you could see that sign. It was quite prominent, real close to the T station or whatever, where people, you know, like their version of the subway in Boston. And when I returned in 2018 to get photographs of it, they had planted a tree. I guess the school had planted a tree in front of that sign. So you basically couldn't read it unless you knew what to look for. And even to get my cameraman to shoot it, I kind of had to push some bushes out of the way, or I mean, some branches and so forth out of the way so we could film it. And even then it was kind of compromised. But I thought, wow, that's interesting. They probably planted that tree on purpose.
You think? Well, when you know, how many people know that the motto at Harvard in 1636 was for the cause of Christ and the church, or that Princeton's motto was cursed is any education that is contrary to the cross of Christ. I mean, when you hear those words, you go, that must be liberty. That must be no. That's the actual founding schools that were a part of establishing the university system in this country. And up until about 1884, when Cornell University became a part of the educational system in America, if not every single school had been started by a church, a denomination, or a particular Christian that was very excited and interested in higher education.
And I understand that even though the state colleges might not be directly Christian or whatever outwardly, they were definitely influenced by all the early colleges, which were absolutely explicitly Christian.
Indeed. And even down to the one that would be close to where I live here in Lynchburg, Virginia, University of Virginia. Thomas Jefferson founded the University of Virginia, but he made sure that there was at least one pastor or minister on the board keeping that moral condition a part of their educational process.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, too, because one of the most prominent professors at the University of Virginia was the guy that wrote those, you know, the McGuffey readers. So Reverend McGuffey was actually a professor for a long time at William and Mary, and he had a profound impact, especially because those original McGuffey readers were filled with Bible stories.
And he said it would be sad for a nation to ever remove the moral compass that could be found in the Word of God. And that was ultimately what he was doing with the McGuffey Reader, was to take those stories and, you know, focus on eternity. I mean, we do a great job, supposedly, we do a great job of educating individuals on the realities of temporal success. But there was a real intense purpose to say, you know, this temporal success is good, but eternity certainly has a little bit more of a long-term reality and a greater opportunity, because if 70 years compared to eternity is certainly something I think we don't focus nearly as much on as the eternal reality of life.
Okay, now, what if somebody said, Travis, okay, look, if America was so Bible-oriented in those first couple centuries, then why was slavery, you know, a part of at least in, you know, some of the colonies, some of the places in America?
I think that's an absolutely wonderful question, and I believe the easiest way to answer that is capitalism, when not manipulated or controlled by hearts that have a heart for true morals, capitalism can go way, way off. But when you look back at their reality, slavery existed nearly everywhere. And even to the statement that previous to Wilberforce getting rid of slavery in Europe, the reality was that to get rid of slavery anywhere within the British colonies would have been violating the authority that the British colonies said that slavery was indeed a part of the rule and the expectation. And so when you look at slavery in America, you recognize that slavery in America was both North and South. I mean, you go to Africa and find out who's making money off of slaves or off of slavery. Capturing tribes were making money off of captured tribes. And so I think there was a reality that said slavery was a reality for everybody. But when you get back right down to it in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s of the 19th century, who led the push to get rid of slavery? It was the church. The church finally realized that it was time for this institution to disappear, and certainly we see the the Northern Baptist and the Southern Baptist, the Methodist and the Wesleyans and others beginning to split because of their saying, wait a minute, this is wrong, it's got to stop.
Okay, now going back to the Bible and the influence on early America, what would you say to those who would say, okay, I'll concede that the Puritans were Bible-oriented, the Pilgrims were Bible-oriented, etc., but by the time you get to the Founding Fathers, they were primarily deistic and not necessarily Bible readers. What are your thoughts?
You love the questions because they just kind of set right up to understand what the definition of deism might be, because the definition of deism that that they have and the definition that of deism that we have might be somewhat different. I don't think you call Benjamin Franklin a deist when he speaks and says, "Can a nation rise without God's involvement in it?" This was what he said in a time when America was struggling at the during the Constitutional Convention. You know, can a nation rise without God being involved? Can a sparrow fall without God noticing? That's not deism. That's the reality that God is actively involved in the founding of his world. And when you look at deism, I've even seen some writers that would suggest that maybe a deist was someone in their time that was not truly able to comprehend and fully understand the Trinity as we know it today. Now, in reality, I don't fully understand the Trinity either, Jerry, but I accept it as being real, and I accept it as being true. But when you look at the definition of deism, God started the world and turned his back on it, there are very few founding fathers that definition fits, because they said God was involved in this. There was a providence, a divine providence that you can follow all the way through the founding and the history that would suggest God's on the throne. God is involved in man's lives. And if he were not involved in man's life, America would have never been able to win the freedom and win the reality of independence from the British.
Okay, let me restate the question in a positive way. Was the Bible important to the vast majority of the founding fathers of America?
Oh, you could not say any otherwise, because 29 of the 56 founders are signers of the Declaration of Independence would have been considered seminarians, because they were at an institution to where they had learned to read, they had learned to understand the reality of the Bible. And when you look at our founding, the judicial, the legislative, the executive branch, where does that come from? That comes from Isaiah 33:22, the writ of attainder, which means you can't force a son to be punished for his father's behavior. That's in the Constitution, based on Ezekiel 18:21, non-taxation for churches, Ezra 7:22, short crime, quick judgment, Ecclesiastes 8:11. The Bible is full of interjections from the Bible directly into our Constitution, directly into our writing. And if you don't think that the Constitution and all of that had any impact, think of what Alice Baldwin said when she wrote a book in 1925, where she had read so many sermons from the northeastern part of this country that came out of the pulpits. She said every single one of the issues within the Declaration of Independence had been preached from the New England pulpits before 1763. So Thomas Jefferson is literally writing about what's already been preached in the pulpits of New England. So to say the Bible and Christianity is not important in the foundation is to look at it with either blind eyes, or I just absolutely do not want to accept that because it doesn't fit within my worldview.
Travis Witt, thank you so much for being with us. You have a website? We only have time for like 10 seconds.
The best way to find out some of the things that I'm doing is go to standingforfreedom.com. Standingforfreedom.com. That takes you right to an organization at Liberty University that I happen to be a part of.
Travis Witt, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
All right. Thank you, sir.